Hi, everyone. Welcome back. It is the 5th of August, 2016. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon here in Winnipeg. Very beautiful day. The last few weeks we've been getting really hot, humid days. It's like living in the tropics. So I'm a little bit worried that in a while we'll be getting larger snakes and spiders the way they do in the tropics. So, life continues to be strange here in North America. I hope things are well in your part of the world. It seems in the United States, their two-party system has now come down to an elitist, overeducated, privileged party and a white supremacist party. So who knows where that's going? However, there are some nice things still in the world. Some friends a few days ago turned me on to something called Carpool Karaoke. And if you haven't heard of this, and you have access to a computer or access to the internet in some way, you might want to check this out. It's called Carpool Karaoke with James Corden, C-O-R-D-E-N. And he came up with the idea of getting really amazing singers to just ride around in a car with him, singing to various songs. So this thing is just pure fun. So if you're interested, you might want to check that out. I've had a number of people write in over this past month, but I responded to them by email because I wanted to have this time open. I wanted it to be free so that I could ramble on about a few aspects of this non-dual consideration. So before we get down to the ramble, I'd like to thank those who sent in questions and comments, words of appreciation. I want to thank those who sent in donations. I want to thank those who ordered Budescence over the website. And I want to thank Marcus Fellows, as always, for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these podcasts each month. As well as all of that, I just want to remind everyone, for those who are interested, I will be in Ireland and England from September 26th to October 15th. I will fly into Dublin on September 26th, and I'll be there till October 5th. Now, there's a weekend in there, and I'll be doing two afternoon sessions with people in Dublin on that weekend. And then I'll fly to England, and between October 5th and around October 10th, there's another weekend in there. I'll be doing two afternoon sessions with people in London. So for anyone who's interested, you can keep that in mind. As always, anything I offer on this website is simply for your consideration. I'm not asking you to believe this. I'm not saying that everyone on the planet should look at life this way. I'm simply presenting what we might call a classic non-dual sensibility. And I'm not even presenting what most people would call the entire classical non-dual sensibility. I'm focusing in on a couple of points that I consider to be essential. So some people relate to this, some people don't relate to it. If you relate to it, that's great. If you don't relate to it, that's just as great. As far as I'm concerned, not everyone is going to be interested in this. If you're interested, that's wonderful. If you're not interested, that's just as wonderful. There are lots of other things in life to be interested in. You could be listening to Carpool Karaoke. if you are interested in some of the points I'm making here and you're having difficulty relating to them, you might want to check out the two main talks on this website. If you go to the Listen drop-down menu and click on the talks, the title talks, that will take you to the two main talks. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And that will give you the broadest sense of what I'm presenting here. So as I said, I wanted this time free to kind of ramble on and maybe approach this in a slightly different manner, because I'm noticing that, you know, it's always a challenge to express the points that I'm making regarding non-duality and regarding life in general. I'm really pointing to our actual experience of life, and I'm questioning the usual assumptions that we make about life. And, you know, in looking at our actual experience, it becomes quite obvious that our experience does not support the usual ideas that we have about life. But in considering that, a big part of it is considering the limitation of describing life in the first place, that ultimately it's impossible to truly describe what's going on right here, right now. Even though we seem to have all kinds of descriptions, those descriptions can't possibly be a truth, an ultimate truth. They may be helpful in certain situations. It may help us function to some degree. But they aren't any ultimately true description of existence. And in that consideration, I eventually ask people to consider what is there when there is no thinking. Now, in getting people to think that question and then simply rest at the end of the question, it's meant to explore this situation, a situation where there is a total absence of thought, and the realization that in that, at the end of that question, it's obvious there is no thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. So it's again a consideration of the limitation of thought, but it's also a consideration of the fact that there doesn't have to be a thought, and it doesn't feel like absolute nothingness. So there is something we could say it seems more essential than thought, because the thought can fade away totally, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. But there's no way to say what that is. And I'm always emphasizing this point that there's ultimately no way to say anything true about what's happening in this moment, that all of these storylines are ultimately false. And then there's this exploration of what is there when there is no thinking, no description whatsoever. So it becomes in some way an acknowledgement of something that's not a thought, but there actually isn't any way to say what it is, and there never is any way to say what it is. However, in these considerations, I'm noticing that some people relate to that very strongly. They somehow find themselves less interested in the storylines of thought, even though the storylines of thought will come and go, and they become interested in the actual dynamic of this moment, something that can't ever really be explained, and the arising and passing of so-called thoughts are just a portion of that dynamic. But I'm noticing that there are others that, in all of us, there is a very strong inclination to go back to storylines and go back to a strong focus on interpretation, intellectual interpretations of existence. And so they take all of my questioning, and in that questioning I will, you know, say something like, there is just a big happening, expressing itself, a totally unexplainable happening expressing itself. And somehow, rather than acknowledging the dynamic without a description, there is the urge to focus on that description. Or last month, I presented this question. You know, I pointed out that a number of presenters have come up with a certain question in order to move their focus away from the world of thought. And ultimately, I was saying that in my own apparent process, I would ask myself, when I would find the focus strongly on thought, this question would arise, what actually is? And in asking that question, there was the thought would fade away, because the question seemed to stimulate a clearer sense of the moment, the realization that, you know, once again, the storylines were not the truth. So the storyline would fade, but it still wouldn't feel like there was nothingness. When the storyline fades away, it doesn't feel like there's nothing at all. And so, you know, in that questioning, there seemed to be an acknowledgement of the actual dynamic of the moment. You know, what we could call the living happening, but there wouldn't be a focus on that kind of description. So then, you know, someone wrote in to ask about this practice that I was offering. How long do we have to do it? What benefits will we see from it? And once again, there was this urge to go into these storylines. But that question wasn't really a practice. It was a sincere consideration, a sincere investigation of the moment. So there was no particular practice I was doing. I was just really curious, like, what actually is when there isn't any description? What actually is when there isn't any thinking? What actually is? Because anytime there was a focus on thinking, it was the focus on some storyline that obviously wasn't the truth. So in all of that, there's been this urge to kind of approach this in a slightly different way. So we'll see how this works out. Whenever I approach this, I initially enter the storylines that we all apparently carry, and I begin to question those storylines in relation to our actual experience. So most times I will start out with a consideration that we all have the feeling everything is changing, and that becomes everyone's general experience, that everything in life is changing. It doesn't matter whether it's our thoughts or our moods or our body, our relationships, our career, our the climate, the political situation, the economic situation, the planet itself, the Milky Way galaxy, the universe itself, everything, you know, even if it isn't our own immediate experience, and it's some sense of existence that scientists are presenting or biologists are presenting or whatever, everyone has this ultimate sense that everything is changing. And we can see that in our experience, our daily life experience. So we all, even in the things that don't seem to be changing so quickly, like our bodies or the mountains or whatever, we don't actually have the feeling that they stay exactly the same as they are in this moment. And then 40 years down the road, they make a change. We have the feeling that somehow they're changing right now. So our bodies haven't remained looking like they were a two-year-old for 50 years, and then all of a sudden they look like a 50-year-old person. We have the sense that they're gradually growing older in each moment as we go along. And it's the same thing with things like mountain ranges. So I've said this before, that there's a very old mountain range here in Manitoba, and that mountain range is nothing but a collection of green rolling hills at the moment. So the scientists tell us, the geologists tell us, that that mountain range was just like the Rockies, a very dramatic mountain range. But now they're just a collection of green rolling hills. So obviously even those dramatic mountains didn't have an actual form that they were going to maintain. And anyone who's lived in the mountains knows that there are little changes taking place all the time. So in that very simple consideration, we can begin to realize that existence, everything in existence, all of existence, is somehow a formless event. That existence itself, what we might call existence or what we might call the universe, doesn't have any particular form. And in fact, the word universe literally means undivided turning. So it's simply a turning, a movement of some kind. And that's, as we live life and we acknowledge that everything that we know of is changing, then it's quite easily seen that life itself, existence itself, doesn't have any particular form. It's more, it would be closer to say it's a dynamic of some kind, a moving, shifting event, a functioning, a mysterious functioning. So that's a fairly straightforward consideration. It's also the case that in our descriptions of existence, we walk around focused on our storylines all the time, and or most of the time. And we somehow believe that those storylines are an actual description of existence. However, if we simply look at those storylines, it's easy to see that in the storylines that we have this story that when we were a baby, we didn't have a storyline. So our storyline says that babies don't have a storyline, and it takes a very long time for their mothers and fathers to give them a storyline, and that those storylines are made more complex by their school system, by their university system, and by society in general. But the fact of the matter is that for a baby that's 1 hour old, there is no story. So whatever this is, you know, it feels like there's something happening in this moment. When this first presents itself in a so-called baby, the baby doesn't even have the sense, I'm a baby. For all of us, we have this story that says we needed to be trained to have this storyline. And trained for a number of years before we could actually have a conversation about life with these storylines. And if we look at those storylines, again, we have the fact that everything that we know of is changing, and yet our storylines are always focused on particular forms. And so when we describe existence, we describe it in terms of form. We talk about people living on a planet in a particular situation in the Milky Way galaxy. We talk about thoughts, and we talk about moods, and we talk about bodies, and we talk about relationships, and we're focusing on forms that we can describe, patterns that we can describe, and yet at the same time, we, most of us in our so-called adult lives, have this sense that everything is changing. So it's very easy to see that these descriptions of particular forms can't really be an ultimate truth, because at some point, those forms aren't even going to seem to exist. We can talk about a certain person all we want, but to say that the universe consists of this person isn't quite right, because that person is some kind of movement that doesn't have any particular form. We all used to be about an eighth of an inch long in our mother's womb, and then we were a foot long and 2 feet long. We were outside the womb. We grew larger. Whatever we are is some kind of dynamic that doesn't have any particular form. That's easy to see. So to describe existence in terms of some form that isn't changing isn't true. It isn't ultimately true, even though it might be helpful in any particular moment to look at life in this way. Ultimately, we would have to say that life is some kind of mysterious movement or action or dynamic or a mysterious functioning. That would be, we would consider that to be some kind of a clearer pointing. But then if we look at these labels, even without some storyline involved, if we look at the actual labels that we have for something, we realize that those labels merely point to the happening in some way. So if I use the label wall, it points to a portion of this immediate happening. Now, it remains the case that I don't really know what the happening is. And obviously, my mother told me to call it a wall. And when my mother was born, she didn't call it a wall then. Her mother taught her to call it a wall. And if we lived in a different country that spoke a different language, it would be quite obvious that the labels would be very different. So these labels aren't an actual name for any of this. The labels just point to portions of this happening. And even if it just points to the entire happening, like we could use a word like happening, but that word isn't what it is. Like happening is not its name. It's just a word for referring to the feeling that something is happening here. There's no way of actually saying what it is. And then also we have these stories about how we're directing our lives, and if we look at those stories, somehow the notion that we are causing ourselves to happen and therefore causing a whole bunch of other things to happen in existence, it's quite easy to see that that's not true either, because none of us has a feeling or a memory that we created this body and this brain, and we don't have a feeling that we're making them operate the way they operate right now. So, like right now, we have this happening, what seems to be this happening of the moment. It feels like something's happening. A portion of the happening is what we would call me or you. So what are you doing right now to be the happening that you are? You know, you're not making your heart beat. You're not making your breath come and go. You're not making your autoimmune system work to defeat disease. You're not making the blood flow through your body. You're not causing the electrochemical firing of your brain cells that are accompanied with the next thought or the next mood. All of that's just happening. Like, if you make no effort at all to do anything at all in this moment, right now, you don't disappear. The process that you call you doesn't stop happening. It just goes on happening. And then if we examine that even more closely, we can realize that we have certain interests in life. We don't create those interests. They somehow have just arisen. We have certain needs in life. We haven't created those needs. We didn't decide we would need to eat in order to survive. We didn't decide that we needed to sleep in order to survive. We didn't decide that we needed to defecate in order to survive. I mean, we didn't create any of that. It's just the way it is. So we don't create our needs. We don't create our interests. We don't create our concerns. We have certain urges to do certain things. We don't create those urges. Some urges are stronger than others. We don't get to decide what urge is going to be the strongest. Many of us don't want to eat as much sugar as we eat. And even though that's an urge, that we want to stop eating sugar, we find ourselves with an even stronger urge to go buy that chocolate bar at some point in the day, or buy three chocolate bars. And ultimately, we don't get to decide what urge is going to be the strongest. In a way, we could say we discover what urge is going to be the strongest. So We don't create our needs, our interests, our concerns, our urges. We didn't create the body. We didn't create the brain. We're not creating how they work right now. Most of us would like our brain to work in a different way, but it doesn't. And for most of our life, we've wanted our brain to work in a different way, but it doesn't. You can see hundreds of thousands of mindfulness practitioners trying to get their brain to work in a different way, in a clearer way, in a better way, in a way where they're always calm and cool and collected. And the brain doesn't work that way. And they're kind of, all those apparent practitioners are wondering why, after 30 years of exploring this and practicing to be objective and mindful, why am I not always objective and mindful? So, you know, we begin to look at some of this very straightforward experience that we have in life, and it becomes more obvious that we aren't causing ourselves. We aren't causing our so-called direction in life. And even if we have an urge to go in a certain apparent direction, we don't create the abilities that we have to follow that through on that, and we don't create the lack of abilities that we have to follow through on that. Again, all of that just seems to be part of this great mysterious happening. So we can consider all of this very clearly, very straightforwardly, very easily. And it becomes obvious that these stories, that we understand life, that we can describe it in any true fashion, the story that we somehow have created ourselves and that we're causing ourselves to move through life in a certain way, those aren't true. However, there's still a very strong tendency to focus on those storylines. And so people often find that very disturbing, that we're still very caught up in these storylines, even though we see that they're ultimately not true. And so in this exploration, I will at some point ask you to consider what is there when there is no thinking. Because if you realize that none of the stories can be an absolute truth, and any time you're focused on the storyline, you're focused on some kind of illusion, the question may naturally come up, I mean, is there anything else to be acknowledged? So the question would naturally arise, what is there when there isn't any description, any false description, which is basically any description? What is there when there isn't any description and there isn't any labeling? So I've shortened that to, what is there when there is no thinking? And I ask people to consider that. So like right now, you can ask yourself, what is there when there is no thinking? You can think that question. And at the end of that question, it's obvious there is no thought. In the moment at the end of that question, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. So we can think that question a few times. What is there when there is no thinking? We can think it again. What is there when there is no thinking? What is there when there is no thinking? What is there when there is no thinking? Now, this is simply an exploration. It's in thinking that question, it gets to be an exploration or consideration of thought, because there's this situation of what seems to be thinking a thought. And then there's the end of that thought and an obvious absence of thought. And in that so-called absence of thought, it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. So this is just to get a feel of what this is like, this absence of thought. And for some, it may be very direct, very straightforward, very obvious. And for others, it may be a matter of thinking this question many, many times. You could think it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, repeatedly thinking this question and resting at the end of the question. Or you might do it for a day or a week. But this is not a practice. It's not trying to get rid of thought. It's an exploration. It's to get some sense of what we call this movement of thought. So there is this thought, this apparent thought. What is there when there is no thinking? And then there's a direct absence of thought. But in that, it doesn't feel as though that is nothingness. Now, one of the interesting things about this kind of exploration is the urgency to go back into thought. But just notice how quickly we want to leap back into thought. So we think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of that question, there is an obvious absence of thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. Think the question again. What is there when there is no thinking? And notice. Notice that feeling at the end of the question. That absence of thought. And notice how much of an urge there is to go back into thought. Now, also notice that if I ask you, what is there when there is no thinking? And we rest at the end of that question, and I point out that it doesn't feel like there's nothingness at that moment, even though there is no thought, there isn't what we would call a thought. At the end of that question, what is there when there is no thinking? It doesn't feel like there's nothingness. Now, if I ask you what that is, what's your response? Are you going to tell me, oh, it's a moment without thought? Because that's a thought. To say that there's a moment without thought is a thought. So in this non-dual consideration and considering the limitation of thought, it's a consideration of this, the feeling of not attempting to define existence in any way whatsoever. So what is there when there is no thinking? Now, is it possible to simply rest as that? What is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of that question, it's obvious there isn't a thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. So is it possible to rest as that? So again, you think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? Now, don't just let me say that question. This has to be a sincere consideration. It's a curiosity. We've for years now, we've been considering the limitation of thought, the obvious fact that these storylines are not the truth. The descriptions we have about existence are not ultimate truths. The storyline we have that we know what's going on here, that we can describe what's going on here, and that's really what we call knowing. Knowing is the common word for attaching to a false interpretation. Understanding is a common word for this situation of attaching to another false description. So every time we try to understand existence, we attach to another false interpretation, and then we're frustrated because somehow that description will at some point, it won't really work well with the actual movement of existence, the actual happening of existence, because it's not a true description. So even the act of trying to define existence in terms of form, when what we're dealing with is something that has no form, That's a contradiction. That's a struggle. Oh, I'm going to define life in this way right now. Life is my relationship, and it's just perfect right now, and that's what life is all about, and that's the way I want to keep it. And then our relationship shifts because it doesn't have a particular form. And then we weep and we wail because, oh, somehow I can't get life straight and I somehow don't have any control over this. When I know I have control over it, so I need to try harder. I need to cultivate my fulfillment a little more directly. Somehow I need to gain more control, more understanding, and I'll be able to then define existence in terms of form and find exactly the right label for it. And I'll be able to hold it in place. I'll be able to be calm and cool and collected all the time. But then we're always frustrated with that. So the non-dual consideration isn't about coming up with another description. And when we see the limitation of thought and we really perhaps make the statement that, oh, it's a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own, the non-dual consideration is not about focusing on that story either. It's really a consideration of what life is not. So it's not that description. Ultimately, it's not that description, even though that description may be helpful at certain times, in certain apparent moments, in certain apparent conversations. No description of life is what's actually going on. The descriptions of form can't be true because everything is changing. It can't. So the idea of form can't ultimately be true. To talk about formlessness, you only talk about formlessness in relation to ideas of form. So if the ideas of form don't apply, then the ideas of formlessness don't apply. And then even if we just want to give it one particular label, like there are loads of people out there who want to say, oh, it's just awareness. Well, that's not true either. Awareness was something your mother taught you or your so-called school teachers taught you. And that label is a totally different label in a different country. And it only points to some aspect of whatever this feeling that something is happening in this moment. There, we all have this feeling that something's happening, but there's no way of saying what it is. So even these labels aren't telling us what it is. So in this non-dual consideration, we're not looking for another label. We're not looking for understanding. We're not looking for control. Somebody sent me a quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj over this past month. And the quote is, don't worry about understanding anything. It's enough to simply not misunderstand. So again, we're considering that all of these storylines are ultimately false, and any focus on any storyline is ultimately false, and there will be a contradiction, an apparent struggle between the actual happening of life and that tight little definition. So we're actually curious in this exploration, is there anything else to acknowledge other than another illusion? So if we're considering the limitation of thought, if we acknowledge that none of these thoughts can possibly be a truth, then the question may naturally arise, what is there when there isn't any false description? And since all thoughts about life, all storylines are in some way false interpretations, the question is then, what is there when there is no thinking? So let's ask it again. Let's think it. You really have to be curious about this. It's an actual exploration. Here you are. It's what you call your living experience. People are always telling me that I'm off in my head somewhere just using words, words, words. But I'm always asking you to acknowledge your actual experience. So here it is, the experience of this moment. It feels like something's happening. Okay, let's not call it the experience, our experience of this moment, because for years now, I've been pointing out that that storyline can't possibly be a truth. So what is it without a storyline? What is there when there is no thinking? Now, don't just let me say this and you listen to it. Think the question. What is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, just rest. At that point, at the end of the question, there's obviously no thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. So now we're getting close to, you know, how would we put this? Like, there's no way to say what this actually is. What we're coming to is the impossibility of description, and we're coming to the point where we perhaps can realize it's not necessary to always be describing existence. A lot of people just focus on their thought because they don't feel there's anything else to acknowledge. In these mindfulness practices, they're pointing out, you know, bare awareness, the bare seeing, the bare hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, the bare happening of the moment. Now, in non-duality, we're taking it a bit further. We're saying, okay, let's acknowledge that bare happening, and then let's stop calling it a bare happening or bare awareness, because that's not right either. So we think this question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of that question, it's obvious there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. Now, for most of us, very quickly, a thought will come back and the focus will go back on the thought. So think the question again, what is there when there is no thinking? Now rest. What is there when there is no thinking? And just rest. And see if there can be a feel for what, you know, what does it feel like? That the end of thought. It doesn't feel like nothingness. But of course, thought will come back. What we call thought will come back. So we have this situation where we acknowledge that none of the thoughts can be an absolute truth. None of the thoughts can really be a true description of existence. None of the names can be a true name. So then, what is, if there isn't any false name or false description? So we think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? Now, at the end of the question, it doesn't feel like nothingness. It's obvious that there isn't what we call a thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. Now, what is that? If you try to give me a thought for it, you can't, because that thought is a false description. So what is it? Are you going to tell me it's awareness? That's false. Are you going to tell me it's a moment without thought? That's false. All the thoughts are false. So maybe at some point there may be the consideration that, oh, there's no way to say what this is. It's just this. So whatever that is at the end of the thought, what is there when there is no thinking? Whatever that is, that's not a thought, and there's no way to say what that is. It seems that we come to some, we acknowledge, or there is an acknowledgement of something more basic than these interpretations, these descriptions. However, We aren't then going to sit around for the rest of our lives feeling as though there's no thought. What we call thought is going to come back. It's going to come back automatically. So now maybe we can consider that this happening, this what we call thought coming back, there's no way of saying what that is either. To call it thought coming back, that's not what it is. What it is an expression of what is. So when we ask the question, what is there when there is no thinking? For a moment, the focus falls away from description, away from thought. There is the feeling that there is no thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. And then it seems as though another thought will come back. And the so-called focus will be back on thought. But perhaps we can realize, I don't know what that is either. Somebody told me to call it thinking. Somebody told me to call it descriptions. Somebody told me to say that those descriptions were an accurate story about what's happening here. But I don't know what that is. So perhaps in this exploration, we come to realize some kind of dynamic that can't possibly be described in any way, and that it's not necessary to always have the focus on thought. There are these so-called moments without thought, but we don't really know what that is. Then there are the moments with thought, but we don't really know what that is. So we come to what we might call a dynamic, a movement, a happening. But let's not call it that either, because we don't have to be tightly focused on these stories. What we come to is the impossibility of description, and the impossibility of description is the impossibility of knowing. Because what we call knowing is just another focus on a false description. Oh, I know what this is all about. And what do we give? A false description. Even the story, I know what this is all about, somebody told us to say that. Whatever this is, it feels like something's happening in this moment. We don't have to make that feeling occur. We don't have to make ourselves acknowledge the feeling that there's a happening of this moment. It just feels like something's happening in this moment. Now that basic feeling is what many people call awareness. But why are we calling it awareness? It's because our mom told us to call it awareness. Our teachers told us to call it awareness. Okay, that's fine. Let's call it awareness. But I don't know what it is. Even if I don't call it anything, what is there when there is no thinking? It still makes itself obvious. I don't have to think a thought in order for it to make itself obvious. I don't have to give it a description in order to keep it presenting itself. I don't have to do anything at all. I don't have to call it anything. I don't have to make any effort at all, not even to be what I am. And here it is. It's all simply happening. What is it? There's no way of saying. What's making it happen? There's no way of saying. It's just happening. So, in this moment, you know, if it wasn't a situation of considering all of this, why would there have to be any focus on thought at all? Like, why is there a focus on thought in this moment? That's another question that might come up. That's a question that just came up. Now, I didn't decide to have that question. It just came up. Why is there a need to focus on thought in this moment? But you know, that question arises, so-called question arises, and immediately the response is, there isn't any question arising in this moment. I don't know what this is. Well, why am I sitting here investigating this? Well, that's another description that's not true. I'm not sitting here investigating what this is. None of those stories are true. There's no way of saying what this is. Well, and what is this thing we call thinking? I don't know what this thing is we call thinking. Why is it happening? I don't know why it's happening. There are these so-called words coming out of my so-called mouth right now. What is it? I don't know what it is. It's not words. Somebody told me to call them words. I don't know what they are. The people who told me to call them words, they don't really know what this is. There's just this, whatever this is. Then the storyline comes up. Yeah, but there must be a me sitting here knowing this. No, that's another storyline. We can think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. So it doesn't need a thought to make itself obvious. It doesn't need anybody making any effort for this happening to present itself. And the thoughts, what we call thoughts, are going to come back in their own way, in their own time. Now, we could get into poetry. We could say, oh, this is the universal mind. This is the undivided dance of the great ocean of existence. Oh, it's so wonderful. But it's not that either. If you really want to connect with it, think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And rest. You don't need to come up with a thought for it. You don't need to come up with any thought at all. But then thought is going to arise. What we call thought is going to arise, and maybe we can realize there's no way of saying what that is either. It's just this, whatever this is. Even that's saying too much, because if I say this, it implies a that. So think the question. Be curious. What is there when there's no bullshit explanation? When there's no bullshit story about awareness, or no bullshit story about me doing something, and no bullshit story about me cultivating my fulfillment or cultivating my awareness? What is there when there is no thinking and rest? So at the end of the question, it doesn't feel as though there's nothing. The entire, you know, the happening of the moment, what we call the happening of the moment, keeps presenting itself. And not only that, it will present the next movement that we call thinking, even though there's no way of saying what that is. It presents it anyway. It will present what we call our needs, our interests, our urges, our concerns, our inclinations, our so-called abilities, and our so-called lack of abilities, even when we don't know what any of that is. It will present the storylines, what we call storylines, even when we don't know what those are. It will present the need to have a storyline in a particular so-called moment. Even though we make no effort to have a need, the need arises. What we call the need arises, even though we don't know what that is. So, most people are going through their life thinking, oh, I need to cultivate my fulfillment. I somehow need to discover my true interests, my true loves. I need to develop the ability to be clearer, to be more calm, to have understanding, to get more pleasure, I need to develop contentment. I need to do it. I need to create myself in some way. So most people are walking around with this focus on this storyline, and they never look at the storyline. Even most spiritual teachings are saying, this is you cultivating your spiritual liberation. Even most of the ones who are saying, there's no way to say what any of this is, that's true, but it's also true that your stories are true and it's you cultivating your fulfillment, your freedom, your ultimate spiritual liberation. They give you both stories. And then you're in real trouble because in one moment it seems like you're understanding, yeah, it's a total mystery. But in the next moment they're telling you, no, there's a you cultivating yourself. There's a you developing yourself. That's not a non-dual sense of existence. That's still duality. There's a great mystery, but then there's a world and people and all the rest of it. That's a duality. The notion that there's duality and non-duality is a duality. So in this so-called non-duality, we're coming to acknowledge that none of these stories can be true. And we acknowledge that simply from our own experience. Like, it's very obvious they can't be true. So then, is there anything else to be acknowledged? Well, what is there when there is no thinking? What is there when there is no thinking? What actually is? When we're not focusing on some bullshit explanation, some bullshit label. What is there when there is no thinking? So in that moment, there can be what we would call a complete absence of thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. So obviously there seems to be something more essential than thinking. What is that? There's no way of saying. And whatever that is, it's happening all on its own. You know, it's just, here it is, happening. Whatever this is. And what we call thinking, that movement will occur at some point, but we don't know what that is. And it's happening on its own. The thoughts arise, the so-called urges arise, the so-called needs arise, the so-called wants arise, the urges that are so strong they seem to push us to action. All of that simply happens. So in this exploration, we're not coming to another storyline. We ultimately can't say what any of this is. And it's obvious that there isn't anybody doing it. So we're coming to the impossibility of knowing. Because knowing, the impossibility of understanding. Because what we call understanding is just another attachment to a false story. When all the stories are absent, what is still makes itself obvious somehow. There's no way to say anything about it. It just feels like something's happening. And all this other so-called stuff, thoughts coming and going, urges coming and going, needs arising. There's no way of saying what that is, and it's simply happening on its own. It's a portion of whatever this is that can't be explained. So we're not coming to another explanation, we're not coming to an understanding. We're coming to the magic and wonder of all of this. There is no understanding this. There is no doing this. That's the wonder of it. Now, wonder doesn't mean you sit around, oh, it's so marvelous, it's so wonderful. Wonder is puzzlement. We come to the impossibility of understanding. We come to the impossibility of doing. Because we find out that what we thought was our doing was never our doing. It's simply this, whatever this is. There's no way of saying what this is. So we can think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And we reach that point of no description, what we could call no description, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. And we don't have to worry that we're going to disappear, because everything that we think we are still keeps presenting itself. Everything keeps presenting itself. Whatever this is, it fulfills itself in each moment. It just is what it is. It's always fulfilled because there is only this what? What can you call it? There's just this happening the way it happens. Obviously, it's the only way it can happen because it's not presenting any option in this moment, in this supposed moment. It doesn't maintain any particular expression. It doesn't maintain any particular form. So it's not a particular form and it's not a particular situation. It's just this. And when I say that, or when this word this arises, the focus, it's pointing to something other than a thought. What is there when there is no thinking? And we rest. There's nothing to worry about. Whatever this is, it will present the next thought that's needed when it's needed, even though those thoughts can never say what this actually is. It will present. It's presenting everything that so-called I am, the needs, the interests, the concerns, the all of that. We think this question, what is there when there is no thinking? And then maybe maybe the story is there that says, well, there's me watching this. No, that's thinking. That's some false description. The baby didn't have a description for this. What is there when there is no thinking? Well, it's pure awareness. No, it isn't. That's some label. That's bullshit. It may be helpful if we're telling a joke or we're trying to function or we have an inclination to function in daily life. Maybe there's a need for some label. Awareness. That's great, but it's not telling us what any of this is. If we make no effort at all in this moment to think or not think or to want something or not want something or to do something or not do something, if we just make no effort to create any of that, it happens anyway. The so-called thoughts are going to come and go. The so-called needs are going to come up. Some of these needs and some of these interests and some of these urges will seem to be so strong we can't resist them. They provoke an action. Words come out of our mouth. All these stories talk about this happening, but the words can't tell us what this happening is. It's just this. And it's doing whatever it's doing. Often people will say that, they wonder, why doesn't Daryl advocate a practice? Why isn't he telling us what to do? It's because what you're going to do is built into whatever this is. All those people who are doing mindfulness practice in order to somehow come to their fulfillment, they're doing that because that's how this movement is presenting itself. How this, whatever this is presenting itself. It's not, there never was a person there deciding to be interested in mindfulness. People talk about transforming themselves through awareness practice. And they think that everybody needs to transform themselves through awareness practice. But there are other people talking about transforming themselves through prayer. And some people talking about transforming themselves through psychology. And some people are talking about transforming themselves through bowling. Through a belief in God. Through the power of positive thinking. Everybody thinks that they're creating the transformation, but all there is transformation. There's just this unformed happening. And even saying that is too much. What is there when there is no thinking? So we can point to this as being some kind of vibrant dynamic, some kind of vibrant functioning that's happening all on its own. But the focus, when we focus on those descriptions, the focus is still on the storyline. And that storyline somehow isn't it. So what is there when there is no thinking? There is that absence of thinking, absence of description. It doesn't feel like nothingness. We don't have to worry where this is going next. It's presenting what's happening next. There's nobody developing their own fulfillment. The people who are doing mindfulness practice could simply ask themselves, what is there when there is no thinking? So there's this which can't be explained. And they're still going to do mindfulness practice. They're still going to move in that direction because it's not their doing. It's simply this, whatever this is. Anyway. This is what's been coming up in the last little while, and it's really, you know, for those, it seems in this happening, this mysterious happening, and in this, within the world of apparent storylines and apparent form, we have this situation that we call non-dual considerations. In all of that, it seems there are so-called people that are relating very strongly to some of the considerations, and there is an acknowledgement of what? This, just this, without any possibility of really defining it in any true way, and the feeling that whatever it is, it's all just happening on its own. Now, even in the clearest pointing to this, the clearest consideration of this, there are others who will inevitably keep coming back to their storylines. And they'll be asking me to describe life in clearer terms. But I'm not talking about describing life in clearer terms. I'm talking about the ultimate impossibility of description. And in considering that impossibility, and also the impossibility of doing anything about this moment, because it's quite obvious that what I usually consider to be my personal doing ultimately isn't my personal doing, in realizing the impossibility of these, then there's rest. We don't have to find an ultimate definition of this. That's not needed. There is no way of saying what this is. We can rest. It's not understanding. And it's not understanding. Because if you start to focus on a story about not understanding, you can only consider that in relation to the idea of understanding, and there is no understanding. So there is no not understanding either. Those terms don't apply to this. They're somehow false. We don't know any true name for this. There is no form to describe, ultimately. We can rest. We don't even have to be concerned about where our life is going, because the only reason somebody is doing mindfulness practice is because they have a totally mysterious urge to do mindfulness practice. Somebody else is doing bowling practice because they have a totally mysterious urge to be interested in bowling. Someone else is doing mountain climbing practice because they have a totally mysterious urge to do mountain climbing. They can't explain that urge. Who can explain an urge to climb Mount Everest and maybe get killed? I mean, who can explain an urge like that? The people who have an urge to focus on psychology or psychiatry, they don't know why they're doing that. They have a mysterious urge to focus on psychology or psychiatry. Whose description of existence is the true one? Is it the biologist who sees everything in terms of organic material working according to the laws of nature? Is it the chemist who sees everything in terms of chemical reactions causing everything? Is it the physicist who sees everything in terms of one great mass of dark energy functioning and the way it functions? Is it the, you know, none of them are the truth. They're just different ways of describing this that can't ultimately be described, because there is no form to describe ultimately. There isn't any label that is any true label. They're just sounds and symbols for pointing to different aspects of this totally unexplainable whatever. Do we have to be concerned about coming up with some ultimate explanation of it? No. Everything we call understanding is just an attachment to another false description. Now, there may be an urge to be attached to these false descriptions, so-called false descriptions, and that's totally fine. There may be the feeling that somehow we're functioning better in all of that. But keep in mind, that's not actually what's happening. This isn't somebody focusing on false descriptions. That story is false true, is false also. What is this? There's no way of saying. Is it the glory of God? No, that's another story. What is this? Is it mystery? No, that's another label. Another false name. That's why in a lot of these so-called religions, you know, in the early stages of Christianity, you weren't supposed to give any name for God. That was the basic blaspheming, the basic way that you limit this, whatever this is. You limit the wonder, you limit this mysterious dynamic by trying to confine it in a name or a definition of some kind. Anyway, I don't know if this is of any interest to anyone. I don't know if anyone relates to this. I don't even know what this is. I don't even know why this occurs, but it seems to be the only thing that can happen. So that's all for now, folks. I wish you well in the coming month. I wish you only good things. However, I know that whatever this is, it will be presenting an apparent bag of mixed things. So until next time, take care. Bye.